All right, so we're recording.
And it's episode 4, is it, that we introduce? Or the re-recorded episode 4?
Episode
4B.
4B, yeah. 4B or 3B or...
Take
2. Like.
Episode 4, take 2.
Yeah.
All right, we ready?
Yep.
So, silence for a few seconds.
Cue us in.
Yeah,
hit
cue us
the
in.
Music.
I'm going to do a clapperboard so I can see it. Right.
Listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 4B actually, because this is the second time we've tried to record it. Episode 4 of the Host Unknown podcast. Welcome, gents. We've got Javad and Andy as usual, as you might expect. Hello, gents.
Hello, hello.
Afternoon. How you doing, Mr. Langford?
All very good, thank you. All very good. How about yourself? Are you coping with living in the house permanently?
Yeah, I guess there's not... you know me, I can work anywhere. I'm fully agile in terms of where I work.
I mean, agile would not be the word I'd use to describe you, but...
I guess... for comfort, not for speed.
built for British Airways business class, I think. Exactly. Which your points must be dwindling faster than Las Vegas winnings.
Well, I'll admit I am concerned that I may lose status, certainly with the amount of business travel that has now been axed, even when this situation does blow over. You know, and I'm just not quite sure I could ever go back to life as it was before.
No, absolutely.
You know, if I hadn't seen such riches, I could live with being poor.
I'm totally with you on that, because I'm due to lose my gold status in May.
Ouch.
Unless they decide, like some other companies, Hilton
to extend it,
extend it for another year, which I think was fair play. But yeah, those lounges, I'm gonna miss those lounges.
Yeah, it's like Big Gen time. Pop. It's coming from a minimum security prison and then ending up in Gen Pop of a maximum security prison. You just don't want to be there.
No.
Folks, this episode is not sponsored by British Airways or their lounges. But if you were to sponsor our podcast, this is the exact kind of like casual sponsorship messaging that would be rolled into it. Your audience would be none the wiser.
Let's just clarify, we haven't actually had a chance to catch up for a while, so you know we're just shooting the breeze here. But I guess. Do we care what Jav feels like at the moment? Should we ask how he's doing, or should we just move on for the sake of time?
Well, I mean, you know, Jav hasn't got anything interesting to say about British Airways lounges. I mean, Wetherspoons is about as far as he gets in the airport.
True story, yeah.
So, Jav, how about you? Are you, you're holed up in your little man cave at the moment?
Well, having been predominantly a home worker for the last few years, I haven't even realised anything's different, to be honest.
You just wondered, you thought it was the summer holidays because the kids are at home all the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The wife looks after the kids all the time. She's responsible for their schedules.
Oh, dear.
So, as you gathered, folks, this has been recorded in what, week 4 of UK lockdown? Official week 4. I think some people were locked down a little bit earlier. So the insanity hasn't quite set in yet, but I don't think we're far off it. I know I've just come back from the shops to do an essentials shop of all of the cut price Easter chocolate.
Easter Boxing Day, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Little Kit Kat bunny chocolate bars for 12 pence. Can't go wrong.
Nice.
So, yes.
This episode is not sponsored by Cadbury's, but if it would like to sponsor it, this is the kind of casual advertising you'll receive.
And Andy, this is why we don't ask Jav to do the sponsorship, because Kit Kats are made by Nestle.
Yeah. Details, mere details.
Oh. Exactly. He'll catch up soon. He'll catch up soon. So we've got a few things to talk about. We have got our regular rant of the week. I say regular, given this is only, the fourth podcast, third podcast, maybe even just a second. I'm not sure that we've done so. irregular maybe rant of the week. We've got the tweet of the week.
Probably the fifth if you count the ill-fated one that will probably never make the airways that we did last week.
I was going to say, which one? There's the one that's waiting for Jack Daniel to die before we release
the memorial podcast.
Yeah, in memorial, yeah. He even said he'd help us release it.
Excellent.
So, keep on your ears peeled. Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the one last week that sounded terrible. We had a massive echo in there. It was really bad.
Yeah, wonder whose fault that was.
Hey, if you want quality jingles and stuff like that, then I'm your man.
You're listening to the Host Unknown podcast. More fun than a security vendor's briefing.
See? Just at the touch of a button, that was.
I honestly thought you were going in a different direction there. When you said if you want, quality podcast with quality jingles, I thought you were going to say download the Smashing Security podcast or follow them on Twitter, and that's Smashing without the G, because Twitter wouldn't let them have the G.
I just sounded like Graham Cluley there for a minute. But I just heard their latest podcast, and apparently Mr. Cluley has bought 2 Facebook portals, so he is now a Facebook customer.
Wow.
That's outrageous.
What's a Facebook portal?
It's like a video conferencing thing that allows you to drop in on family. So his in-laws had it, and it was deemed to be by obviously other people in the household to be the right solution, and so he's had to install these Facebook portals, so they can video conference with the in-laws. And you should listen to their podcast after you've listened to it. Well, you would do after if you. But anyway, you should listen to the podcast because it's fascinating. And he does get ripped to shreds by Carol or Carole or whomever because of this. Because obviously he is very, very anti-Facebook.
Indeed. So, I mean, I spent last night on a Zoomcast. Is that the right word? When you've got a Zoom conference with loads of people?
Yeah.
Watching our good friend Mr. Rice get drunk for his birthday.
That must have been... Was that like a spectator sport?
It really was. It was a case of, how many beers has he actually just downed in the last 20 minutes?
Oh, my God.
But, yeah. It's,
for those who don't know, Mr. Rice is the talented gentleman who writes all of the... songs. Well, not all of the songs, actually.
Yeah,
two songs.
Two out of the three
songs. The two that scan really well
yes.
are the ones that Mr. Rice has written for us. The one that didn't scan very well was Mr. Malik's, but still has a huge number of more views than the last one, I should point out.
The last one was the one that nearly destroyed the band.
It nearly did. Well, no, I wouldn't say the video was the last. The music video was the last one that nearly destroyed the band. I'd say it was Andy.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah. So, Andy.
Let's move swiftly on from this
topic.
Yeah,
talking of Andy, let's go to Billy Big Balls. Andy, so Andy's going to be doing a Billy Big Ball. This is sort of like the part where we talk about somebody who really is outdoing themselves currently on the internet.
Billy Big Balls of the Week.
And I think it's fair to say... Jeez, how long is that jingle? That is a quality jingle, Tom. How much should we pay for that?
It's... we haven't paid for it.
That's one of the samples, right? You get them to the right samples.
Exactly.
And, we just reuse those and say, sorry.
I've been struck off Fiverr as a result.
Oh, well. So, Billy Big Balls of the Week this week, or this month, let's be honest here. We're not doing these every week. This is absolute royalty. And I'm sure you will agree if you have seen Netflix's... biggest documentary of all time, The Tiger King, which is an exploration of big cat breeding and, fair to say, extremely bizarre underworld with extremely eccentric characters who you'd be forgiven for thinking were all on meth. This incredulous documentary features a character called Joe Exotic, who is my Biggie Smalls. Billy Big Balls of the week.
The Billy Big Smalls of the week.
I know, Tom, you have seen Tiger King.
I have.
Have you been on it yet, Jeff? Have you seen it?
I have, yes. I just finished it last night. And
and your thoughts?
So, apart from being late to the party,
yeah,
what were
she
your
did
thoughts?
It, didn't she?
Well, yeah, she did it. She definitely killed her husband and fed her to the tigers. There's no doubt in my mind. I actually, one the good thing about the show, and there aren't many redeeming qualities, was that I watched it and then I finished it and then I came onto InfoSec Twitter and they just seemed like normal people after that.
Can you imagine what Tiger King Twitter is like? Or tiger breeding Twitter? That must be insane.
Yeah, it's just, I can't believe people. And what's funny, one of my colleagues, Eric, he lives only a few miles away from the Carole Baskin. He lives in Tampa or that area. And honestly, he says it's pretty much that is what life is like in some of those parts.
Yeah,
so there's no exaggeration.
Yeah,
Eric is actually kind of like our litmus test for how crazy Americans are. If we think something's crazy, then Eric will tell us yes, it is, and here's a worst example.
Yeah, he's my token American friend.
Yeah. So any other Americans?
Some
who
of my very good
with
friends
Jav,
are American.
Yeah. Any other Americans listening who are friends with Jav? It's not you. It's Eric. So Andy, why the Billy Big Balls though? So many people may not have seen this, but most people will have. At least. Well, both the listeners will have heard about Joe Exotic. But why the Billy Big Balls? And what the hell has this got to do with InfoSec?
Do you know what? I'm not even going to do the InfoSec link that I was going to do.
Why?
Just because, you know, litigation, you know, people are bored at this time of year. So you know, there's a lot of lawyers sitting around doing nothing. So I'm just going to skip over that part. But I mean, this is a guy who is, you know, people assumed was top of his game. You know, he had a big reputation. He did a lot of stuff, you know, ran some very big operations. And seemed to be the go-to guy, but you will realise what an absolute S show that he actually runs thing, you know, and the, you know, the truth
spaghetti?
Behind the scenes, spaghetti show this stuff yeah. is. And behind the scenes, he is not, you know, probably not someone you want to be dealing with for a number of reasons.
At least not in a business capacity.
No,
I can imagine he's the life and soul of a party.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't get me wrong. Lovely guy, I'm sure. Just, you know, not the person you want in charge of Tigers, put it that way. You know?
And so, although, you know, as it turns out, he's afraid of Tigers.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's, you know, you take that to the InfoSec industry, you find someone like that that just shouldn't be in charge of InfoSec.
Well, we can think of a few, can't we? Some might even be coming up later in the show.
Who knows?
No. Spoiler alert.
Excellent. Oh, excellent. So so Joe Exotic is our
Billy Big Balls of the week.
God, it does go on a bit, that one, doesn't it? I'll have to chop that next time. So thank you, Andy. Absolutely fascinating. I must admit, I did enjoy that show and the eighth episode where they had caught up with a bunch of people. That was really good too.
It was, but do you know, I don't want to do a spoiler, so we can come back to that one next time.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to move on to Jav and Rant of the Week. But before we do that, Jav, what have you been up to recently, anyway?
What do you mean? I feel like this is a trick question.
You know us too well. No, not at all. No trick question at all. I'm merely trying to fill space before we just churn through the topics we've decided on.
And in no way has your boss reached out to Tom and said, what does he do all day?
Yeah, no, I will neither confirm nor deny that that's what's happened.
I saw how Joe Exotic got set up. I can smell a set up coming a mile away now.
So, well, all right, I guess, you know, have you done any spring cleaning? Have you felt the need? Have you disinfected your house? Have you...
I have indeed. This weekend was Easter weekend, so we had 4 days off, as opposed to the 3 days off our American cousins get. Aha, suck it.
And just out of interest, my friend of different religious persuasion, do you actually celebrate Easter in your household?
It's the law of the land, mate. I mean, like, if the government says you get 4 days off, who am I to argue? Yeah.
And if the law says you have to eat chocolate eggs and bunnies, then hey.
Well, on the day after when they're on discount, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're still frugal, right? You're not,
because my personal beliefs actually forbid me from buying anything on full price.
And that, Andy, is why we have mortgages and he doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
At least not in my name.
I didn't think you could own a business.
Oh, I was going to say, Jeff, you really want to be making jokes about tax evasion where it's recorded and going out.
Play the next jingle, Tom.
I can't find it. Hang on. Oh, here we go.
Tweet of the week.
So, the tweet of the week is a tweet we saw in this week that we think deserves the dubious honour of being the tweet of the week. And this week's one is actually two tweets. It's a tweet thread, so about the first two tweets. And it's from Chris Hoff, a.k.a. Beaker on Twitter. And he says, there are people in the InfoSec industry who are held up as idols and heroes within the community who have, under their watch, presided over multiple mega breaches and privacy debacles, yet continue to be given airtime and lauded for their expertise and leadership for failure at scale. Is the idea, if they talk a good game about ideal states of security and privacy, whilst providing an affable yet academic but likewise controversial stance on execution, that they add value because they've effed up and supposedly know how not to repeat? Data suggests otherwise.
Wow, heavy stuff.
Very heavy stuff. But then the cherry on top is a reply by Alex Stamos.
And who, pray, is Alex Stamos for the uninitiated?
Alex Stamos was he's chief security officer at Yahoo, the company famous for having a massive data breach.
Wow.
And then he moved over to Facebook where he was chief security officer.
Did they have any privacy issues at Facebook?
Well, you know, he was there when they had the biggest, like, election sort of like, the Cambridge Analytica and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure Chris wasn't talking about Alex, but Alex then replies to Chris saying, morning, Chris.
Quite self-referential. That's quite self-aware.
Yeah. And Chris replies saying, morning, Alex. And then Alex does go on a 20 part. So it's basically a blog written out in tweets about, defending his situation and stuff. But I got a good chuckle out of that.
It's... Joe, what's interesting about that, well, quite apart from the fact that these tweet threads are just so annoying because half the time we can't even find them, or they disappear after halfway through or whatever, and also write a damn blog or get a Facebook account. But I think that the fascinating thing there is, well, one, either Alex was very coincidentally saying, hello, or it was very aware of the fact that that's exactly what's happened to him. But does that mean that we should be ignoring his, you know, his thoughts and expertise, in inverted commas? Because breaches happen to everyone, right?
Indeed.
You know what? It's really hard to come to judgment or say anything definitive because I just don't know Alex Stamos.
No,
I've never met him, never conversed with him. So everything I know is all secondhand, which is useless information. So then you look at the professional aspects and it's the things that Chris has mentioned. But that's not the entire story. There's far more to the story, probably. So I can't say either way whether he's just unfortunate to be in those situations because he's at these high profile companies, which are historically they've been poorly managed anyway. I don't think anyone say like, I don't know whether anyone different would have achieved any different outcome in that situation. It's or maybe they were fantastic companies and he just went and screwed it all up. We'll just never really know.
Yeah, because so, I mean, we've all been in the driving seat when something's gone wrong. And in fact, I think in your case, Jav, you actually caused something big to go wrong. But part of the time it's completely out of our hands, as you say. Sorry, Andy, you were going to say something.
I was, but then I ate Haribo and lost my train of thought.
You got lost in the sugar deliciousness.
It's actually called the Juicy Woosy one. So I hit the cash and carry last week.
Sorry, are you? Wasn't that your first girlfriend you're talking about?
No, that was Juicy Lucy. That was. Anyway, back on track. So you're the CEO, okay, of a big corporation that is shooting through the roof at the moment, and not the other Zoom, which the SEC had to delist from the market because people were accidentally investing in,
making money from it. Oh dear,
thinking it was the famous Zoom collaboration tool. But presiding over these massive incidents, you're going to pick up a lot of experience, a lot of lessons learned. Is that valuable to take into a company that's starting with no one?
I think you're also under some pretty severe gagging orders about what you can say and what you can't say. You know, because it could
be... Are you trying to imply that Zuckerberg has got a legal team that would do something like this? Right? I thought they were just a friendly social network.
Yeah, well, indeed. Indeed. But we all know, and myself included, that actually sometimes it's made very clear you do not say anything about, subject XYZ at all. If you do, we're going to sue your ass. Here's the NDAs, etc. So it may be that, in this particular instance, using, the examples you gave, Jav, that Alex was pushing against Facebook massively, which is why he ended up leaving. And maybe he was actually just banging his head against a brick wall.
It could be. And you're right, there's loads of companies, especially in the US, it's very common to have non-disparagement clauses where you can't say anything negative. But I think going to your first point about whether it's wise for Zoom to bring on board Alex, given his history. And I think the two things that are important to understand is one is it's not he's just being brought on as an advisor, and there's a whole bunch of other people and companies being brought on at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's not just Alex. And secondly, it's fantastic from a PR perspective.
Yeah.
Because from Zoom's perspective, they've probably got people internally who now, with the right resources and budgets and with a bit of external help, they can actually put in place a plan. But you need a face to show to the public as well to say, hey, we're very serious. Here's someone who, and let's be honest, outside of the InfoSec bubble, no one will know who Alex Stamos is. But if you say the former head of security of Facebook and the lecturer at wherever he lectures at the moment, it slips on Harvard or Stanford or something, and he was at, it brings a lot of credibility. He keynoted Black Hat and everything. And so half the battle in a lot of situations, it's like optics and how you're seen to be managing stuff. So I do think it's a clever, it's a good move by Zoom that, you know, they are getting on board a lot of experts. And I think from an optics perspective, it's absolutely great that they're getting Alex Stamos. I mean, they could get you. So, for example, Tom, but then people are like, who's that? Why him?
Yeah, absolutely. Why him? That extremely successful and very effective CISO and virtual CISO for hire.
You price yourself out the market. Good work.
What, by saying I'm only available to work for people like Zoom? Yeah. I didn't say which Zoom, though. But the unfortunate side effect of that is, and again, this is not aimed at Alex at all, but the unfortunate side effect of that is that people who are not relevant anymore but have made their names, you know, number of years ago, creating, I don't know, some kind of encryption algorithm in the 50s or something, they're maintaining their relevance through this optics thing, you know, through being constantly being brought onto the board of this or the advisory committee of that, etc. And yet they've had no real world experience for the last, you know, 15 years. I can think of quite a few people like that at the moment in our industry, and I'm wondering, what exactly are you contributing except yet another book?
Are you just hating the game now? Or the players instead of the game? Because that pretty much is the game in most industries.
I'm only hating the game because I haven't quite worked out how to get in it yet.
Yeah. So I think from a broad perspective, it's very much an American game, by and large. And a lot of that is because of the startup culture, the investment culture. So that's why you see, you know, so many startups and security. We only see the security side of it, but a lot of other tech startups are in the same position.
Yeah.
And when a VC goes in and they fund a company, there's just a playbook that they follow a lot of the times. It's like, yeah. this hates, which is why every product looks the same.
Yeah.
You know, every website looks the same.
And their roadmap. Yeah.
Their roadmap, their whole thing. And it's just like a sausage factory. And these people,
that's
they understand.
That's just InfoSec conferences in general, though, right?
Yeah.
No, you're thinking of a sausage fest.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
So, you know, this is just a byproduct of the entire system that we're in, the ecosystem. So I'd say fair play. If people can get, say, director positions or advisor positions and they can get paid lots of money, we might think they've not got the right experience. But if the company is paying them and they feel like they're getting value, or they're opening up a list of contacts that can open doors for them, there's all these ancillary benefits other than the specific thing that is the technology expertise.
Yeah, that's very fair. That's very fair. I mean, you are worth exactly what somebody is willing to pay you.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to defend myself because I don't feel like I've slipped into that category at all.
Says you on the advisory board of a couple of companies.
There we go. What does an advocate do again? So you don't actually do any real work day to day, right? Is that you're not actually operationally hands-on changing things, no? Just
yeah, because it's funny because last time I phoned you, you were like underneath the server rack trying to plug in some cables and configuring a firewall in production on the fly.
Oh, that was just on my lunch break, dude. That, yeah.
That was for his personal server. All right, Jav, that was
Tweet of the Week.
Thank you very much for that. So let's talk about sponsorships, shall we? A little bit more seriously, because we spoke about it last time. And sponsorship from, you know, companies like Zoom. Maybe, Alex, you'd like to come on to the Host Unknown podcast.
And just to clarify, do we want Zoom, as in the real video chat service, or do we want Zoom Technologies, who obviously value has shot up through the roof over the last few weeks people invested in the wrong company?
I think if they pay money, we don't care.
Absolutely.
I would prefer to get Zoom Technologies on board, to be honest, because I want to first find out what they do. And then I want to know what the execs have spent all their money on.
Yeah. And if they'd like any sort of security advocates or maybe people who could help with their security strategy or even some of their, you know, M&A activities.
Well, if they need to offload, if they need to divest any of that business, let me know.
Yeah, yeah, we've got the expertise right here in this virtual room.
Yes, this room is the Three Comma Club. We've each got one of the commas, but together...
I was going to say, what, we pause just before we say our names or something. Oh dear. But yeah, we would take anybody's money, frankly, and we would speak nice things about you, and we would put you in a nice little jingle, which might sound a little bit like this.
Host Unknown, sponsored by insert name here.
Now, when I say that we put you in a jingle like that, what we would actually do is just talk over the jingle at the point where it says insert name here and shout your name, because these jingles are expensive. We can't afford to make one every single time.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, it's gonna, you know, especially for the rates that we're charging. But we are very open for sponsors, as Smashing Security says. It allows us to give you this podcast for free. Not sure what the overheads are on a particular podcast, so I think it's only about $10 a month. So. Not quite sure what Graham and Carole are spending their slush fund on.
They charge more for their time than any of us do.
Probably. And let's face it, they're probably worth it as well.
Yeah.
Well, Graham does have more hair to look after, so.
He does. It's very luscious as well, isn't it?
Going to say, to be honest, I actually truly believe that maintaining the dome takes longer than actually really? Maintaining a full bouffant of hair. So I obviously, I've decided to take the whole lot off. But then the hair grows back daily. You know, I actually feel like I'm growing more hair since I've shaved it off than I ever could when I had hair.
Just wet shave it in the shower.
That would mean him having to have a shower every day.
Oh,
yeah,
true.
Let's not get silly, man. We're saving water here.
Which in week four of lockdown is challenging at best.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm out here in Africa, so it's, we look at water a bit differently to you guys in your first world. Fancy.
Is that fancy Africa country. Avenue in Stepney?
Exactly that, yes. <it's>, and the Africa-scented Lynx body spray.
Oh. Oh, my God, my house smells of that with my teenage boy. Jeez, it's like walking into a fug most mornings, especially when he was able to go.
When
he
was courting.
Courting, something like that. Oh, dear. So yes, sponsors, if you'd like more of this kind of really fantastic on-point conversation, then do contact us, and we will gladly take your money. Isn't that true?
Oh, we will always take money, yeah, and we'll absolutely debate you for it as well. You know, if you want to, pull out some industry experts, stick them in a room with us. We will gladly roundtable them and just dismiss everything they say.
Yeah, and comment on their hair.
Yeah,
and the quality of their podcast.
Personal insults.
Like yeah, absolutely, yep. Absolutely. Everything goes here.
And mothers aren't off limits either.
If you're really clever, you can sponsor us to invite one of your competitors onto the blog, and we'll roundtable them.
Yeah, it's kind of like, do you remember Celebrity Deathmatch?
Yes!
Yeah, it's like the podcast equivalent of that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that. Although, we have taken, money from sponsors in the past. We've got some very big name sponsors.
What up, Anthony?
Yeah, thanks, mate. I hope you like this podcast. We did it for you. Thanks for
big up.
Woo! I'm gonna have to edit that out.
Yeah,
but
before they sue us, that's probably their only revenue stream these days, isn't it?
Well, actually, technically, we took money from a company that is no longer a legal entity.
This is true.
Excellent.
This is true. Yeah, and we're then told not to worry about it.
Yes. Until they started to worry about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Although I've yet to see a penny of it, I have to say.
Well, You know, like putting it through all these offshore accounts, it doesn't leave much.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, those tax authorities in Switzerland are really hot. Oh, right, dear. We're going to move on to the last part of the show. This is the time of the week when we talk about...
Rant of the Week.
Oh, I picked a short one there. So this is me talking about a rant of the week. And I'm going to be talking about, funnily enough, this whole shift to working from home and working flexibly, etc. So I've been involved with a number of companies who do events and do webinars, who do, you know, talks, forums, roundtables, all that sort of stuff. And I've seen, you know, not necessarily the clients I've been working with, but I have seen a number of companies out there who are just struggling with this shift from in-person events to virtual. So they fired most of their events teams. They're struggling to think what to do next and how to reach their market. When actually, Have I Got News For You on the BBC the other week was done just through Zoom. So all of the contestants and the celebrity lead were... the subsidy host, sorry, were zooming in from their homes and their kitchens, etc., for the show. And it was a little weird, and it was, you know, it had a different vibe to it, but it was still funny and still successful. So if the BBC can adapt to, you know, this kind of working and actually doing shows and doing events, etc., then most companies should be able to as well. It's just that they're not willing to stick their toe into that water. And if one of your vendors is one of these people and they're struggling to adapt to these times, that's got to really tell you something about, you know, who they are and how they operate as a company. They cannot adapt to, you know, changing environments. And that really grinds my gears, as certain cartoon characters might say. And I think it's worth pointing out that when you see companies who are embracing this and still continuing to push events, those are the sorts of companies that are actually very, very on point in these times and can obviously adapt and improvise and overcome. So that's my rant of the week.
And it sounds like you're actually quite passionate about this here.
Yes, you know, given that I could certainly offer some services on this front, but but no, in all seriousness, it does annoy me because, you know, that it's not that difficult. It really isn't that difficult to jump on a Zoom call. I've seen, you know, a shift in some companies. In fact, some companies I used to work for now doing LinkedIn events, you know, round tables on LinkedIn. And they're actually very effective, just as effective as, you know, doing something in person. And in fact, you can do more of them and reach more people. And so I wonder why there aren't more companies doing this sort of thing.
Yeah, so I guess if we, looking at the size of companies, so I guess there's different aspects to this. And so I'm lucky enough to work for a large global entity, which is very well resourced and has very mature processes. But, you know, even we, you know, in the beginning, we had that challenge of, you know, suddenly the entire workforce is connecting from VPN, whereas, you know, historically, we'd always have at least... 40% of the workforce permanently office-based. Yeah. And so, you know, I guess the challenges with working remotely are far more than just, hey, you know, we can't get a conference call together. It is, you know, genuine access to systems, which can only be accessed via VPN. You know, do you have bandwidth issues connecting via VPN? How long does it take you to upgrade that? You know, and these are real challenges that we saw, you know, certainly in those first couple of days of the lockdown, which were overcome. You know, it is that improvise, adapt, overcome. But I guess not every company is geared up to do that.
Well, I can understand, you know, and we're sort of slightly moving, you know, segueing on this, but it's still very valid in that, you know, you had probably pandemic protocols where, in place where, okay, this is what happens when the entire workforce of a country or whatever can't make it in. And you followed those protocols in such a way that allowed you to be flexible, etc. And you may be, I don't know, but you may be loosened some security requirements for
absolutely
a short term
not.
In order to, to allow people in. Of course, I wouldn't expect it, but I'm sure some companies did. And other companies will follow suit, and that's absolutely fine. But I think the fact that is that when people can't adapt and they can't overcome, and they've not either invested in some kind of planning, you know, like maybe like, you know, some countries at the moment who disbanded their organizations that looked at pandemics and how to respond and all that sort of stuff. You know, the sheer short-sightedness of that for an organisation.
Well, you're just hiring an expert when it comes up, surely.
Yeah, except all of those experts are in short supply, right? You know. But it just really strikes me that this, when this is all said and done, I think we're going to look back and we're going to see, you know, not just events that are going to fall by the wayside because they haven't shown that they can adapt, but also companies you will really see their shortcomings as a result of this. And actually, you'll start to question, are they the right company? Are they the company I should be doing business with? Because if they can't handle this themselves when things go wrong, how are they going to help me?
Man, you are so wrong on that take.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I've got to say about that. No,
that's
no,
all
no.
We want.
Tune in
insight.
Next time for the conclusion of that argument.
If he remembers.
The conclusion is available to Patreon members only.
That's another lesson from Smashing Security, Smashing Without the G.
Yeah. No, I do think, well, I see where you're coming from. You're kind of like the Bear Grylls improvise, adapt, overcome kind of mentality, which is fine. And I usually subscribe to that. But what you're not taking into account is this is very unprecedented.
Yeah.
So, okay, let me tell you a story. Snuggle up, kids. So there was a bank, I believe it was in the US, and they had fantastic DR processes in place. They had, in case their main building was offline or something happened, then, you know, they had a hot backup, they had a standby, they had, you know, other sites, they had services set up. And their main building caught fire one time. And it was a massive thing. They shut off several blocks. And they had, you know, all the fire department there. And it's like, okay, that's cool. We prepared for this. And they started shifting people over to the other locations. And all the systems were there. But what they didn't account for was the emotional trauma that most people had suffered. Some of them had received word that some colleagues had perished. Some were unaccounted for. Some had actually seen people die in front of them. Some were like calling their families up and sobbing and like, I nearly died today. So, you know, having something methodically set up and actually executing it when you have the human element involved and the emotions involved are two very different things. And what we have nowadays is it's not just a case of like improvise, adapt, overcome, start being a remote events company or something. It's like, oh, all of our sponsors are pulled out because they're trying to preserve their cash flow. Journalists are being furloughed because there's no advertising, there's no money coming in, so there's no one going to be covering your event. Professionals are, you know, busy doing other things. Maybe, you know, people's have got loved ones who have been, impacted by COVID-19. They're in hospital. There's all sorts of other things. So I think, you know, when you take a step back out of that narrow lens of like, well, why don't you just do it online? It the economics and the emotional toll and everything actually pile on a lot. So while I admit you do have a point, I think it's a very small point that is needs a bit more empathy to it.
Well, without wishing to agree with you, I agree with you entirely.
worst hostage negotiator ever.
Exactly. No, I agree that you know, when I was talking about protocols, etc., I wasn't explicitly talking about, you know, step one, do this, step two, do the other. Those protocols themselves have to be flexible, have to take into account a human element. I mean, there's a whole, you know, we could do a whole talk or a whole session or a whole, virtual webinar on just that subject itself. I completely agree. And that, that story you gave about the human elements and the human suffering completely, and your, you know, your planning has to take that sort of thing into account. Your point about, you know, losing sponsors, etc. Yeah, totally agree, totally get that. But we're talking about companies. I'm not. We're talking about companies who, if they don't have a presence, then they don't survive at all. And if they don't start to generate that presence, if they don't start to generate that interest themselves with the few journalists that are left or the few people or staff that they have left, etc., then they really are going to go. They haven't worked out what their minimum viable product is in order to continue to survive, because they're not supporting it. So, yes, you're absolutely right. But I think the point I'm trying to make was that, all of that being the case, you still need to adapt, overcome, you know, or adapt, improvise, and overcome.
And will we start to see the advent of new startups where people figure out what that minimum viable product is? You know, whole launch of new companies who come out of this this current pandemic filling in the gaps where other people couldn't. I mean, I know for you know, myself, I've been taking deliveries from you know, direct from Covent Garden Market, where food comes in fresh to the country, ahead of supermarkets, because they've got a distributor in the area, or, you know, the restaurants around here weren't able to open, so they've been continuing their regular deliveries and then reselling them. And it could be, you know, an alternate revenue stream for them going forward. I mean, that's just a small example. But something that did make me think, as Jav was telling that story about how, you know, people didn't account for things. And this will just go back to, you know, a previous company where I was working. We had just spent a lot of money on this new data center, you know, backup site. And as, you know, with all these things, you can't just, you know, buy it, switch it on, and move to it. So we were running three data centers for a while. Obviously, a very big cost for a small company, as you know, we migrated our secondary backup site to another site. Anyway, you know, usual thing, we're doing maintenance as you know, a company with a high risk appetite. We would shut down the primary site, move all traffic to the secondary site whilst we upgraded a load of stuff. One time this was occurring during office hours, the backup site, which was serving all the traffic, went down, and we couldn't get hold of anyone. You know, we didn't know what was going on, so you know, one of the guys drove up there. You know, he called from the car park. He said, utter chaos. He said, you know, this place, there is like fire engines everywhere, there are people everywhere. And you know, there's me, you know, explaining to the MD, no, it's a proper data center, like, you know, nothing dodgy, like full HVAC systems, fire suppression, you know, everything sound, backup generators can last for, you know, 5 days without contact with the outside world, contractors for more fuel. But what had happened, you know, in this site that we had trusted could continue to run in all eventualities and any failings they may have. There was one of the UPS devices caught a light, which triggered the fire suppression system, which automatically called the fire brigade. And then when the fire brigade came, the commander-in-chief, or, you know, whoever was responsible for all his people, refused to enter the building until all the power had been switched off. And so even the data centers have this fireman switch, which literally kills all power to the data center. There's no graceful shutdown, there's no continue running with UPS. It is a hard shutdown. And you know, despite all of the controls we had to ensure that environment continued to run, for the fire brigade just turned up and switched it off. And that's how we lost an entire site one afternoon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the total unexpected, the black swan event happens, right?
Yeah.
So what was that provider?
Well, funny, this was, they were known as C4L, Connections for London, back in the day. I'm not sure if they're still known under that name or if they, but this was out in Maidenhead. You know, you couldn't miss it. It was great.
Most of them are in Maidenhead, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the owners had, one of the owners had a Ferrari that he always used to park at the data centre because it was safe, and then leaving it outside his house. So
it wasn't that day.
No, he had a bit of a car collection, but Yeah, as you say, you know, these are black swan events. You know, did anyone really plan the, you know, does anyone's pandemic plan really account for the entire organisation globally not being able to attend the office?
It probably didn't, but their planning should ensure that they can continue to communicate and plan in a managed and consistent way, you know, throughout the period, rather than this is all you have to do and you're done, follow steps 1 through 10. It should be follow steps 1 through ad infinitum until you all decide it's time to stop.
Yeah. You know. Fair point. Well, I think that's certainly a good discussion. Certainly, some different
steps 1 through to ad infinitum. Yeah. And you can hire TL2 services for this. Who can bill you from steps 1 through to ad infinitum?
We only bill per step, don't worry.
Rant of the week.
So, folks, I think we've prattled on for a long time. I think we originally aimed at 12 minutes and we've hit something like 45. I think we're good to close our third, fourth, or 4B...
4B podcast 4B done.
Podcast 4B done. Yeah,
it's a wrap. Yes.
Yeah. So thank you very much, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jav.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Andy.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure. Never a chore.
Indeed. And thank you, Tom.
Host Unknown, the podcast was written, performed, and produced by Andrew Agnes, Javad Malik, and Tom Langford. Copyright 2015, or something like that. Insert legal agreement here as applicable and binding in your country of residence. We thank you.
I think I might have to update that.
No, definitely not. Keep it 2015. That's
it costs too much.
Exactly.